Ellie P. from Fontaine, California.
No, sorry. Sorry. Hi, everybody. My name's Polly, and I'm an alcoholic. Hi. Gosh, there's a lot of people out there. I'd certainly like to thank Elaine and the committee for inviting me to come to Reno. I got to come here 2 years ago, and there's nothing more special than being invited to come, but gosh, to be invited back is... that's even neater, and I just really like to thank you for letting me have the opportunity to come here. This is absolutely a beautiful place to have a conference. It's really neat to be here, and especially it was neat to see Gracie and David. Gracie and David have been an attraction that I've known in this program since I first got sober, and to meet some people that I've heard a lot about, and to be able to be here to meet them personally, and that's just real special. I'm very, very nervous. That's what I come to a podium of Alcoholics Anonymous, and it usually takes me about 10 minutes to get out of the way and let God kick in, because I am one of these people that is just absolutely addicted to approval. And, you know, it's just like I get up at this podium and I just want you to absolutely love me and adore me. And I want you to, you know, walk out of here saying, gosh, did you hear what she said? And, you know, and it's like if I had anything to say, what on earth am I doing occupying a seat in Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, it's like my best thinking got me here. And I'm here to share my experience, strength, and hope. And I love what Gracie said today. And she said there's a big responsibility that comes with this podium. And I take that very seriously, because I believe that's true, because I've seen a lot of people use this podium to express their opinions and their judgments, and I think sometimes that does a lot of harm to people who are out there who may need to hear what we have to say. And I really like to remember what the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, and the reason I'm here is to share in a general way what it used to be like, what happened, and what I'm trying to be like today. And what I'm going to do, and the book tries to tell me to do that, is to share my experience, strength, and hope. And, of course, and I'm an opinionated alcoholic, and I've got a lot of judgments, and I will try to keep those to a minimum, so that what I say here is just the things about me and not my judgments, because I know I'm a person who's very sensitive. I don't know if there's any other sensitive alcoholics out there, but I'm a real sensitive alcoholic, and, you know, some of the things I've heard in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous said, I'm just real glad they weren't said when I first got here, because I'm afraid I might have been out the door. And I think it's a real responsibility, and I appreciated her reminding me of that today, because I think that we need to watch what we say from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous. I found a God in this program that I can understand. And when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I didn't have anything. The God that I had doesn't even compare to the God that I have in the program today. I am the only child of Southern Baptist faith, and that's probably enough to screw anybody up. And I came in here with a lot of old ideas. And I had this God who lived way out in the sky, and he had white robes and a beard, and he carried a clipboard. And being a self-centered alcoholic, I just knew that what he was doing was just keeping score, you know, of all the things that I had done. And being, you know, going to those Baptist Sunday schools, I can remember those preachers standing up at that podium, and they had their fists, and they were slamming the podium, and they'd lean in, and they'd point their finger just like that. And I just knew that they were pointing it at me. And they would talk about all these thou shalt nots. And one of the big thou shalt not is thou shalt not drink. And they talk about, well, if you've thought it, you've done it. And, you know, I needed a drink a long time before I had a drink. And I used to think a lot. And so I had a lot of these bad thoughts. And I just was one of these people who just felt doomed. I just had this feeling of just impending doom. And I just had the feeling of that I will never, ever be good enough. There's just nothing that I could ever do that would make me good enough. I felt very, very intimidated by those people. And I've learned a lot in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the thing that I've learned is that I have a disease of perception. You know, my perception is distorted. And I don't see reality the way it really is. The way I see things is not the way it is. And today I know that it was nothing to do with the Baptist Church. It was just my perception. But see, I didn't know that. And I just always felt like I was never, ever good enough. And my mother used to use a term that we live in a God-fearing home. And that's the way I felt about God, is that I totally feared Him. And I just felt like that there was, you know, that what's the use? There's just no way I'm ever going to be good enough. And I just developed an attitude of what's the use. Today, I have a higher power who just absolutely loves me to pieces. He is crazy about me. Also, he has an absolutely marvelous sense of humor. Now, my name is Polly. It's not Pauline or Paula. It's Polly. Now, if you're a little girl growing up with a name like Polly, you're going to be teased a lot. Now, and, you know, you remember, I'm sensitive. I get my feelings hurt real easy. And I don't like for people to laugh at me, and I don't like for people to tease me. And it used to be things like, you know, Polly wants a cracker and Polly Wally doodle all the day. And I just couldn't stand it. But I've learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that there's just no negatives in God's world. Everything has a positive result, even though I think it's negative. I have learned even the things that I think are the worst things that can happen have turned out to have a positive result. And today I know that even in a room as big as this, with this many people, most of the time, if somebody says Polly, I'm pretty sure they're talking to me. Because there's just not very many Pollys in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I didn't know that I was an alcoholic, but I knew that I was a drunk, and I knew that I was a lush. And I used to drive down the freeways in Dallas, Texas, and I used to pray to God to have heart disease or cancer or something because I knew that I was dying, and I just wanted to die of something respectable. And today I know that the disease of alcoholism is my greatest gift because if I didn't have the disease of alcoholism, I wouldn't qualify for the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. And everything I am or hope to be, I owe to the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. 9.5 years ago, I married Dave. Dave's last name is Pistol. My name is now Polly Pistol. I don't know about your higher power, but my higher power's got a dynamite sense of humor. You know, it's real hard to remain too sensitive if you got to rock around with a name like Polly Pistol. It's absolutely marvelous. I've learned to be laughed at. I've learned to be teased. You know, when I say my name, somebody is expecting a go-go girl with two tassels and two shotguns. You know, that's what they expect. And I've really turned into a brat about it. I just love to go up to somebody and put out my hand and say, "Hi, my name's Polly Pistol," and watch them try to hold it together to talk to me. It's great. And our book, AA Comes of Age, there's a rule in there called Rule 62. Just don't take yourself so damn seriously. And you know, God has been so good to me to give me this silly little name, because what's happened is I've learned to lighten up. Just, you know, lighten up and just learn to wear life like a loose cloak, you know, and just not be so intense. And I love the gifts that we get in this program, and they come in the strangest ways. God works in mysterious ways, and it's just dynamite. I am a person who did not come from an alcoholic home. In fact, I'm going to go see my mother on Sunday, next Sunday, not tomorrow, but next Sunday. And she lives in a little town in West Texas, and she'll meet me at the airport. And she'll say to me, like she says every time she meets me, "Now, honey, you don't need to let anybody know you're an alcoholic." And, you know, I look at her, and today it's okay. You know, I wanted my mother to understand my disease so desperately. And I know today that it's okay that she doesn't understand my disease. Today, I am just so grateful that I don't wear that same shame anymore. Thanks to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, because that's the kind of shame I also carried. I was so, so ashamed. But because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and the 12 steps and a loving God, I'm not ashamed. And that's a miracle, to not be ashamed. I've heard people stand behind podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous and talk about, you know, what their alcoholic father did or their alcoholic mother. And today I truly believe that this is the thing that we have in common, is the feelings. Because I think a lot of times our differences are how we drank or where we came from. But how we felt about all that is the same. And I would hear people stand behind podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous, and they would talk about how they felt about their parents drinking. And I had those same feelings. And I began to remember, you know, things about my childhood. And when I would hear people talk, I would have the same feelings. And my dad was a very, very angry man. And today, I truly believe that the only difference between my dad and I is my dad just forgot to take a drink. Everything else was there. And my dad used to have fits of rage, just like a periodic alcoholic. And my mother used to say things to me like, "Polly, now you just be nice, because if you'll be nice, Daddy won't have one of his fits." And Daddy always had one of his fits. And when he did, he would curse and scream, and furniture would fly, and he'd knock my mother around. And I would just be terrified, and I would be so scared. And my mother and I would walk around on eggshells so not to set my dad off, because we didn't want for him to display that rage, because it was so terrifying. And I would look at my dad, and I would say, "There's no way I'll ever be like you." And the irony of it was, is I became just like him. And I would look at my mother, and my mother would sit there, and she was just this little lady, and I would look at her with such disgust, and I'd say, "There's no way I'll ever be like you. You know, you're such a wimp, and you won't stand up to him." And I was so ashamed of that. But the irony of it was, I became just like her. And I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the worst of both my parents, an angry wimp. I was just one of these people, it's true, who was just totally enraged. But to the world, I just looked so nice. And I'm one of these people that is just a recipient of sarcasm. And, of course, we all know what sarcasm is. It's these cute little remarks that are supposed to be funny, but it tears your guts out. And it seemed like I would just be one of these people that people love to fire sarcasm at. And then people would say, "Oh, I'm sorry, Polly, did that hurt?" And it was like, "Oh, no, that's okay." And I would swallow that down. And I have an AA sponsor, and she tells me whatever goes down's got to come up. And what would happen is I would swallow down that rage, and I would go home, and I would take that out on my two little boys. And my two little boys were the only ones who ever really saw that rage and anger in me. To the rest of the world, I just look so nice. I spent a lot of years thinking that what was wrong with me was that I had been brought up in that Baptist church. What was wrong with me is I was an only child. What was wrong with me is I had had these parents. And today I know that I have a disease, and it's spiritual in nature. And because I suffer from a spiritual illness, I am cut off, as the big book says, from the sunshine of the Spirit. And I know today that it would not have mattered how much my parents loved me. It would not have mattered how much my parents gave me. It would not have mattered how much they did for me. Nothing would have ever been enough. And today I know, because that I was an only child, that my parents not only loved me, they adored me. But because I have a disease and it's spiritual in nature, I could not feel that. It was not until I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and you began to heal me spiritually that I was able to feel that love. I just couldn't feel it. And no matter what they did, it was never enough. And I always pointed my finger at them. I'm so grateful to this program because my father died when I was 2 years sober. And I'm so glad I got to know. I'm so glad that you had taught me, because when he died, he was so proud of me because I was sober and I loved him so much. And I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that I was able to have that gift. And that's a miracle. When I was 18 years old, I married an Air Force officer, and I just knew that I had found my knight in shining armor, and he was going to carry me off into the sunset, and we were going to live happily ever after. And I loved what Gracie said today about there's just something about a man in uniform. And I agree. There is just something about a man in uniform. I absolutely loved the military, and I loved, you know, all the things that went with it. And I'm Southern born and raised. I may live in, and I live in Fountain Valley, California. They have me in Fountain, California. I live in Fountain Valley, California. But I come from Texas. I was born and raised in Texas, and I got sober in Texas. And in fact, I think I heard Gracie say that her and David were in Nederland. I grew up in Port Arthur, which is right down, but she was talking about that today. And I just, you know, I loved what they did in the military, and I was just groomed for this because, you know, I was taught as a young girl. My mother was just, I mean, you know, she wanted me to be a prim and proper lady. And, you know, you didn't cuss, and you just, I mean, we just didn't do things. And I was just perfectly groomed for this, and I was, you know, I was taught to stand by my man. And it was wonderful. I mean, we went into the military, and they had these little classes about how to be, you know, the perfect wife and not embarrass the jock. I mean, you know, you just had to do these certain things. And you know, I was trained to be a hostess. I mean, this was the thing. I was to serve men. That's the way I was brought up. And it was great. And I loved it. And when we got into the military, I was 18 years old, and we came to Sacramento, California, Mather Air Force Base. And I was not old enough to drink in the state of California, but I was old enough to drink on the Air Force Base. And I had my first drink of alcohol. Now, in the 20 questions, it talks about, you know, did you progress, you know, the progression of the disease of alcoholism, did you drink in the morning? Well, we started drinking in the morning. And it was like, you know, it never occurred to me that you didn't drink in the morning, because we had these little things called coffees. But at the coffees, they served more than coffee. They served Bloody Marys and screwdrivers. So it was Bloody Marys and screwdrivers in the morning. Then you went to the luncheons, and it was sherry. And then it was martinis and Black Russians and Stingers after. And that's the way I started drinking. And it was fun for a long, long time. And I love the things that you did in the military. I love the parties. It was just, you know, I just loved it. But there's something I have found out about myself, and I found that out in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous with a fourth and fifth step, and that's that I always wanted somebody to take care of me. I always wanted to be taken care of. Well, I had married a SAC pilot, and not only was he going to be gone, but he was going to be gone for years at a time, and I was going to have to be responsible for myself. And then it ended up we got stationed in some not-so-desirable places like Sacramento, California. We got stationed in a place called Loring Air Force Base, Maine. And I'm here to tell you, it is the armpit of the world. And I've got these two little boys, and I know absolutely nothing about being a parent. I do not know how to take care of children. I have absolutely no skills in which to be a parent. And I've got these two little kids in the frozen north, and I'm just having a nervous breakdown every 20 minutes because I don't know what to do with these children. And I went to an Air Force doctor, and he said, take these. And from 1962 until 1977, when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I drank alcohol, and I took Librium and Valium and Seconal and Nemutol. And if you take those kind of drugs and you drink alcohol, you are not an active alcoholic. And I call myself a couch potato alcoholic, because I did my dying on my living room sofa. I'm a Southern lady, and I always behaved as a Southern lady. So I would go to parties, and I don't know if the rest of you can get into this feeling, but I would go to parties and drink, but not as much as I wanted. Just hang in there. And it was just the most uptight, horrible feeling. I can go to a party today where there's drinking, and I'm just sitting there saying, drink it. Just drink it. You know, they just don't drink fast enough for me. And it was just that feeling of just not drinking. And then I would go home and drink as much as I wanted and pass out. Because I must remain a lady at all cost. So what I did is I died on my living room sofa. I just laid there and watched soap operas and listened to Joan Baez sing the blues. I had the opportunity. A dream came true for me. My youngest son is also in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and we both got to speak at a conference in Duluth, Minnesota last September. And I've talked a lot about being a couch potato alcoholic, and I got to hear James say that, you know, my alcoholism from him sounds a lot different than it does from me. And James talked about what it was like to be 5 years old, and he talked about what it was like for his dad to be gone and his mother to be passed out on the sofa, and what it was like to be a five-year-old little boy walking back and forth in front of that sofa, absolutely terrified because he just knew that his mother was dead. That's the disease of alcoholism. At any rate, I want to tell you some of the things that brought me to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I don't talk a lot about a drunkalogue because most of the things that, you know, how we talk about all the things that, you know, are, can you top this story in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous? Well, there's not a lot to talk about when you're a couch potato alcoholic. I did most of all the things everybody else does drinking, I did sober. So my drinking is very boring. I just slept through it. I'm one of these people that I've heard a lady who's out in the desert, and she says she believes that there's two kinds of alcoholics, those who want to get in and those who want to get out. And I just wanted to get out. And I just had, you know, I never wanted to suit up and show up for life. I just never wanted to be responsible for myself. I just had this vision of just like being on a magic carpet, floating out in the universe somewhere, just never being responsible for myself. Now, I am married to a speed freak and an alcoholic. And for the life of me, I cannot possibly imagine why people take drugs to vibrate. You know, that just wasn't my deal. I just wanted to take something and just go to sleep. And that's what I did. At any rate, one night, if it was 8:30, any night, I was passed out on the sofa. And my husband jerked me up, and he sat me at the kitchen table, and he said, "Polly, alcohol and pills are our problem. And if you just didn't drink and if you just didn't take these pills, everything would be okay." And he started throwing the pills down the garbage disposal and he started pouring the booze down the drain. Now, I had reached the place in my disease of alcoholism where I ceased to go to sleep or wake up. I passed out and came to. And so I was just sort of sitting there at the kitchen table in my semi-comatose state watching him do this. So when he was done, I just went back and laid down and passed out. Now, I had also taken to drinking things like NyQuil cough medicine, vanilla extract, and Scope. Now, in my keen alcoholic mind, I had thought, if you can't smell me, then you can't tell me. You know, you can't tell if I've been drinking if you can't smell me. And I learned these things all by myself. I hadn't even been to Alcoholics Anonymous yet. And you know, we came to the program with Alcoholics Anonymous, and I was told you have to be responsible for what I put in my body, so you have to read labels so you don't drink things with alcohol in them. Shoot, I had been doing that for years. I would look at labels for the different reason. I would buy things that had the most alcohol in them. And, you know, at that time, I smoked about 2 packs of cigarettes a day. And if you carry a bottle of NyQuil around in your purse, nobody asks. You know, it's as if you take a swig of NyQuil. And I knew that it would do the same thing as alcohol. Well, at any rate, about 3 o'clock in the morning, I came to. And I was so sick, I didn't know if I could get in my car and get to the 7-Eleven to get a bottle of NyQuil. And that night, I had reached the place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about the dilemma of the alcoholic, where to drink is to die and not to drink is to die. I found myself that night crawling around my garage floor, going through the plastic bags to get those bottles to turn them up to just get one drop. I absolutely had to have a drink of alcohol. And that night, my husband caught me downing a bottle of rubbing alcohol. I absolutely had to drink to live. Shortly thereafter, I had several car wrecks. And the third car wreck would bring me to treatment for the first time. And I totaled an automobile in Irving, Texas. Now, I'm a blackout drinker, so to make a long story short, I had gotten out of my car, called the police, and told them that my car had been stolen. And lo and behold, here comes the police with my husband. And we go to the Irving police station, and I get to see that look on the non-alcoholic's face that just doesn't understand why we do the things we do. And this policeman looked at my husband with so much disgust, and he says, "Why don't you just take her home and sober her up?" And on the way back home, he looked at me and he says, "Polly, there's a treatment center, and it's not far from our house, and I wish you would go." And that night, I entered treatment for the first time. And this was a detox center, a 7-day detox center. And they took us to a lot of AA meetings. And I really liked what I saw. And I loved the laughter. And I loved the people in Alcoholics Anonymous. But there was just something way down inside of me that said, people like me just don't become alcoholic. And while I was in this treatment center, I had what we call in Texas a jitterhouse romance, you know, where sick falls in love with sick and you walk off into happy destiny. Well, we walked off into happy destiny for 58 days. And I was 12-stepped and brought back in that treatment center more dead than alive. I had been beaten up and numerous and sundry other things. And I had reached that place in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous that talks about pitiful and incomprehensible demoralization. Because now I knew what my problem was. My problem was sobriety. Because I could not live with the feelings of being sober. Because sober, I knew what had happened in that motel. Sober, I knew what kind of mother I had become. Sober, I knew what kind of wife I had become, what kind of daughter I had become. And I came to rooms of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I've heard that men hate what they've done, and women hate what they have become. And I hated what I had become. And I just did not believe that there was any way that I could live sober. And I left that treatment center, and I got a bottle of scotch, and I got a bottle of Valium, and I checked in to a motel. Now, I don't believe that there's anybody in this room that doesn't have an Eskimo in your life. And an Eskimo is someone who leads us to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And if you've never heard the story about the Eskimo, I'm going to tell you. There was a priest, and he was talking to this man in Alaska, and he says, "Isn't God good?" And the man looked at the priest and he said, "Well, I don't know about that." He said, "I asked God for help once and he didn't do a thing." And the priest said, "Oh, well, tell me about it." And he said, "I was lost in the bush of Alaska and I cried out for God to help me and he didn't do a thing." And the priest said, "Well, he must have done something. You're here." And the man said, "God didn't do a thing. This Eskimo came by and gave me a ride to town." And I think that's what happens to a lot of us, and that's how we get to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I had such a lady in my life, and she knew nothing about the disease of alcoholism, but she loved me. And she said that day that something came over her. And see, today I know what that something was. That was God working in my life through her. And she said she began to drive around until she found my car parked outside this motel. And I hadn't closed the door all the way. It was on a half latch. And she pushed it open. And on April the 8th, she found me laying there. And I was taken to a hospital in Bedford, Texas. And I was pronounced dead on arrival. Now, needless to say, that didn't take because I'm standing here tonight. But I need to tell you about the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous in my life. You know, like I said, we would go to the meeting after the meeting, and everybody was telling, "There, can you top this story?" Well, how do you talk about being a couch potato alcoholic? Because, you know, you guys were talking about your affairs and your DUIs, and like I said, I didn't do the DUIs, but I did the other. I did all that sober. And, you know, you would talk about this, can you top this story? Well, I didn't have a this, can you top this story. So I would say things like, "Well, I was pronounced dead on arrival," feeling nothing, absolutely, totally not in touch with the grace of life, just to be in touch with the gift of life. I walked around in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous for a lot of years before I found a God of my understanding. I had to hit a bottom in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous that was ever bit as devastating, if not more devastating, than the bottom I had hit behind alcohol and drugs, and that was behind sex and relationships. I was just so desperate to be loved. See, I couldn't feel love. I didn't know that you loved me. I didn't know that God loved me. And I was just so desperate to feel that love. And I would just go to anything to just love me, just make me feel okay. I know if you'll love me enough or do enough for me, then I'll be okay. And I had to die in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous trying to be okay. And I walked around meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous over 5 years, and I talked the talk, but I didn't walk the walk. I talked all this stuff about God because, see, I would go to the meetings, and I wanted you to love me, so I would say what I thought you wanted me to say just so you would approve of me. But, you know, It doesn't matter. The program of Alcoholics Anonymous is so perfect, it doesn't matter. Because one day, over 5 years of sobriety, sitting in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, a wonderful, wonderful feeling came over me. And that feeling was, everything's going to be okay. And most of the time today, I have that feeling. And you know, it took me a long time to share that from podiums of Alcoholics Anonymous because I was just so ashamed of that. And I just didn't want people to really, really know the secret. But you know, I've been around the program of Alcoholics Anonymous long enough to know that I'm not unique and I'm not different. And that there are other people in this program who have a lot of years of sobriety and they haven't got that feeling yet either. See, I was one of these people that I thought you had it and I didn't. And the only way I was going to get to stay here is if I acted like I had it too. See, I'm that person in the big book that has a lot of problems being one among many. Or it's not the big book. I'm sorry. It's in our book, AA Comes of Age, when Dr. Thibault talks about alcoholics are people who have a problem being one among many, friend among friend. We either have to be at the top of the heap or below it. And see, today I know that I'm not unique. And that it's necessary that I share from the podium of Alcoholics Anonymous that I did not find a God of my understanding in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous until I had been here for over 5 years. But there was something that I continued to do, and I continued to work the steps the very best that I could work them. I continued to take direction, and I suited up, and I showed up no matter what. I just kept coming back. And what I'd like to share tonight is if you happen to be one of those people, just please, please, please don't leave 5 minutes before the miracle. Because I can promise you that if you just keep suiting up and showing up, it'll happen to you. And the reason I can promise that is because the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous promises that. In the promises, it says that these promises are being fulfilled, some of them faster, some of them slower, but they will all materialize if we work for them. Absolutely, it will happen. I am a very, very slow study in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I have not been a 90-day miracle. It has taken me a long time in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. People I know 1 and 2 years sobriety have gotten things a lot faster than it took me. But I truly know that people like me can get it too if we just keep coming back. As it turned out, I ended up in a psychiatric hospital in Arlington, Texas, and then I was taken to a hospital in Dallas. My husband came to pick me up in Arlington, Texas, to take me to that hospital in Dallas, and he looked at me and he said, "Polly, it'll be real nice if you go to this hospital voluntarily, but it's really not necessary. Because I have a piece of paper here signed by a Fort Worth judge that says you're going anyway." So, you know, here I was, people like me who do not become alcoholic. I had just been court committed to treatment. And my papers read that I was a detriment to myself and others. And on the way to treatment, I looked at him in my keen alcoholic thinking and I said, "Well, if this is going to be the last drink I have in my whole life, it looks to me like I ought to be able to drink on the way to treatment." And he never said a word. He just pulled into the liquor store, got me a bottle of vodka and a paper cup, and away we went. And that was April the 11th of 1977. And by God's grace in a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, I'm sober today. And, you know, God willing and the creek don't rise, in 11 days, I'll be 13 years old. And that's a miracle in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Thank you. Thank you. I'm not sure I wanted what you had. I'm not sure. I was just so embarrassed and just so ashamed of myself. I just didn't know if I could stay sober. And while I was in this treatment center, they took us to a lot of AA meetings. And when I left this treatment center, they gave us a prescription of how to stay sober. And it said to read the big book, get a sponsor, go to meetings, talk to God. And the very last thing there was, don't watch the way a man talks. Don't listen to the way a man talks. Just watch the way he walks. And, you know, I watch a lot of people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And today, you know, the people I hang out with are the people who are busy in the program. I want to be talking to the coffee makers and the people who are setting up the meetings and the people who are doing something in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because I know that if it had not been for doing those things for somebody like me, I would have never stayed sober. I could not feel this spiritual experience, but just doing the things that I was told to do in the program, I stayed sober. I was one of these people who was a whiner, and I'm also a recovering whiner. And I used to walk around meetings, and I would just say, nobody understands me. I was the most misunderstood human on earth. And I was told to get into the 12 and 12 and to burn the 11-step prayer in my brain, that it had absolutely nothing to do with me being understood. It had only to do that I be understanding. And it had nothing to do that I be forgiven, because I just said, they'll never forgive me. And it had nothing to do with me being forgiven. It had only to do that I be forgiving. And that it had nothing to do with that I be loved. It had only to do that I be loving. And I was told to be a greeter and to reach out and to talk to other alcoholics. And I was one of these kind of people that's, well, I don't have anything to share. And I was told if I had 30 minutes more sobriety than that newcomer to share that 30 minutes, and just maybe I'd get to stay sober. And you know, I'm one of these people that goes around talking about the good news of Alcoholics Anonymous. And you know, I'm not the least bit interested in whether you want to listen or not. It's not important. We carry a meeting down to Skid Row in Los Angeles. And when we go down there, we carry a bunch of sandwiches and cookies and food for the homeless. And most of those people they don't care whether we're down there to talk about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. They're there to get the food. And you know, that's okay, because every time we go down there and we sing the praises of Alcoholics Anonymous, I get to stay sober. And that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's the miracle of our program, is one alcoholic sharing with another alcoholic. And you know, I've heard a lot of people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous say, well, if they want it, they'll call. Well, you know something, folks? I'm real grateful that Bill didn't wait for Bob to call, because it was Bill who called Bob. Because he needed to stay sober. And the reason I go and share with other people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous is because I get to stay sober. And I think that's why we drive psychiatrists and psychologists crazy, because they're talking about, you know, do it for yourself. Well, I am suffering from a spiritual illness. The book talks about a spiritual malady. And the only way that I can recover from a disease that's spiritual in nature is to reach outside myself and share that with another alcoholic so I can hear me say it, so I get to stay sober. It's that paradox of I've got to give it away to keep it. And I just never understood that. I was always waiting for somebody to do it for me. Fix me. Just fix me. I didn't understand that I had to share it. And by doing that, I got to get better. the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. I was one of these people that was a victim. I was the most misunderstood human. You know, poor little old me. I was just a victim. You know, it's just the people, places, and things were my problem. I am so grateful for a book called Alcoholics Anonymous, because in that book it says, most of our problems are of our own making. And I'm here to tell you, that's the good news. That's really the good news. Because I was always thought that other people, places, and things were my problem. But when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you told me, you are the problem. I was told to look at the mirror in the mirror, and I'm looking at the problem. And I'm so grateful for that, because you know, if other people, places, and things are my problem, I'm screwed. But if I'm the problem with a loving God in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I got a shot. I got a shot at changing. And that's the miracle. I mean, it's a miracle that people like us can be different, and that we can stand up and say, I'm wrong. I'm wrong. Because I had to die to be right. Because something, I just had to die to be right. And I learned in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, just, Polly, you're wrong. And to surrender and to do it somebody else's way. I am so grateful for that. When I was 3 years sober in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I divorced. And we had been in the service until 16 years. And my husband was diagnosed with congestive heart failure. And I was still drinking. That was before the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. In the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, selfishness and self-centeredness, we think, is the root of our disease. Selfishness and self-centeredness is the root of my disease. Because I sat across a desk from a doctor, and he told me how sick my husband was. And the only thought that went through my head was, who's going to take care of me and these two kids? You know, I don't ever want to forget that. Because the only difference between that person and the person I am today is the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Without you, I become that same person again. I was very afraid that this man would die. And I somehow felt like I was his savior. And that without me, he couldn't live. And I would walk around, you know, meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm sure they do that in Reno because they sure did it in Texas. And, you know, people would get right in front of your face and tell you the truth. And people would get in front of my face and they would say, Polly, your husband is not dying from congestive heart failure. You are. And at 3 years of sobriety, we dropped the rock. And we divorced. Now, I want to tell you how important I am in this man's life. 6 months later, he remarried a much younger woman and has never been healthier or happier since. And, you know, I learned that he had a higher power and it was not me. And I've learned that many, many times in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, that other people have a higher power, and it's not me. When I was 3.5 years sober, I married my best friend. And Dave and I had known each other since I was 6 months sober, and he was 1.5 years sober. And Dave and I make the statement that if we'd have known we were going to marry each other, we wouldn't have told each other the things we told each other. And Dave had moved to Salt Lake City, Utah, and I was still living in Hearst, Texas, a little town between Dallas and Fort Worth. And he came back to Fort Worth on a job, and he looked at me and he said, Polly, I love you, but you need to get something straight. I don't want to have an affair with you. I want to marry you. And you know, things like that aren't supposed to happen to people like me. And Dave has been my greatest gift in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Neither one of us knew how to have a marriage. We each knew how to take a hostage, but we didn't know how to have a marriage. And we watched people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Because, you know, this program is an attraction. And we watched how people who were married live in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And Dave taught me about unconditional love. Because, see, Dave knew all about me. And he loved me anyway. And Dave has loved me until I have been able to love myself. And he has always loved me, no matter what. And Dave and I have the kind of relationship that's just go be the very best you you can be. And I never, ever knew how to do that. And he just says, you know, just go and be the very best Polly you can be, Polly. Just do for yourself what you've always wanted to do. And I just never knew how to do that. I just never knew that love could heal those kind of things and those kind of fears, that you just believe that you're a nothing and that you'll always be a nothing and it'll never, ever get better than that. But I have learned that love can heal. I've had a lot of icky character defects come up in this marriage. I have been very, very jealous. You know, I think Dave is just about the neatest man in the whole world. And, see, I think all the other women think that, too. And I've been blessed in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous to sponsor absolutely the most beautiful women in Alcoholics Anonymous. And they're all younger than me. And worst of all, they're all thinner than me. And they adore Dave, and Dave adores them. And I had a lot of problems with those beautiful women. But you know, today I know that jealousy is just my own insecurities. And when I get those icky feelings come over me, today that's my barometer. That the only relationship that needs any attention is my relationship with God. It has absolutely nothing to do with Dave. And it has absolutely nothing to do with those beautiful women. It just has to do with my relationship with God. I am so grateful to know that because I was always looking somewhere else. And I know today that everything is right here. You know, when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, I thought God lived way out in the sky. And you know, today I know where God is. And I was told to look in the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says that God's deep within. And it tells me how to find Him, to search fearlessly. And I know today that all of my problems are of my own making. They have absolutely nothing to do with anybody else. Dave and I are two different people. Dave is kind of one of these quiet guys, you know, he just lets me babble on and run my mouth and do all this kind of stuff. And he's just one of these quiet, really kind of serene kind of guys. And Dave likes to throw a 40-pound pack on his back, and he likes to go walking around on top of the Sierras. And that's what he does. And the guys in his AA group and some of the fellas he sponsors, they climb mountains with ropes, and they put back, you know, packs on their back, and they sleep out, you know, in the woods. And that's not my deal. That is just not my deal. You know, I'm kind of one of these kind of people that wants to be doing everything. You know, if you got a committee, I want to be on it. Now, I don't only want to be on it, I want to be the chairman. And I got one of these phones that you walk around with. It doesn't have a cord, you know, so I can keep ironing, folding clothes. I don't have to stop for anything. I can just keep talking and keep moving. And that's the kind of things that I do in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I think that's wonderful because it's a nice, you know, that's kind of, Dave is my rock, and he's always steady. And I'm so grateful to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous and to the gift that I've got here that has taught me how to truly love another human being. And by doing so, I have learned to love myself. And the person that I could just never, ever take a look at because I just couldn't stand was myself. I just could never stand to live inside my own skin. And today, I truly care about me. And that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, and I'm so grateful for that. I want to quickly tell you about my two sons. The disease of alcoholism traumatizes children. And the disease of alcoholism, and because I had the disease of alcoholism, I took from my children the most valuable thing that they had. And that was their self-worth, their self-respect, and their very being was stripped from them. The disease of alcoholism did that to my children. I came to the program and I just didn't know if I could stand it. I was so guilty that I just didn't know if I could stay sober because of what had happened to my children. And I realized when I got sober that my 14-year-old son was a full-blown drug addict. And I walked around meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and I'd say, it's just not fair. It's just not fair that James is a drug addict because I'm sober now. And it was rooms like this and people like you that said, Polly, you just suit up and show up because you may be the only big book James ever reads. My oldest son is one of our Al-Anons. And you know our Al-Anons need one of us to have a reason for living. And Russ was a person who took care of me. Russ was the person who put me to bed. Russ was the person who called work when I couldn't get there. Now, I don't know when is the last time you've seen a passed out drunk, but we don't breathe too good. And you know, many is the time I've come to with this son screaming at me, Mom, wake up, are you dead? And me to come to and see the fear in his eyes. And you know, for the past almost 13 years, I haven't had to come to and see that kind of fear in anybody's eyes because of something I'm doing. And for that, I've been overpaid in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Well, what would a good Al-Anon do if their alcoholic sobered up? But go marry a practicing alcoholic. 3.5 years ago, she sobered up. And my daughter-in-law is calling me on the phone, and she's telling me that my son has taken a bottle of sleeping pills, and he's cut up his arms. And you know, I want to get on the next thing smoking to Texas, because by now I'm living in California, and rescue my son. And it was a woman's meeting in Woodland Hills, and a lady who said, Polly, you just suit up and show up. And you let God take care of Russ. Well, what happened is that God moved Russ to Sheboygan, Michigan. And I like to lovingly say that Russ ran into his drug of choice, which was a woman. And he and the lady in Texas divorced, and Russ remarried, and he moved to Asbury Park, New Jersey. And it began a little over 2 years ago. The nightmare began. And my daughter-in-law is calling me up on the phone, and she doesn't understand. She doesn't understand why Russ feels the way he feels. She doesn't understand why Russ hates himself so much. She doesn't understand why Russ wants to destroy himself. But see, I understood. I understand what it's like to not be able to live inside your own skin. I know what that feels like. And for the next year and a half, I was terrified to pick up my phone. Because I didn't know what was going to be on the other end. Because my son tried to kill himself 6 times that year. He tried many things. He tried pills. And the last thing he did is he put a pair of scissors in his gut. Just because he hated himself so bad. And I just didn't know if I could stand it. I just didn't know if I could stand it. I just didn't know if this program was good enough. You know, I didn't know if that God was going to be big enough. I knew he could keep me sober, but I just didn't know if that God was big enough to take care of my son. But you know, I believe in the power of prayer. Because I shared from this podium, and I shared from this podium 2 years ago about that son. And the story was different than it is tonight. Because I was just so afraid that he was going to die. And I was so powerless. I was just so powerless. And I would share that from podiums, and people would come up to me and they would say, "Polly, we're going to pray for your son." And one day I was talking in a meeting in Southern California, and this man walked up to me and he said, "I want your son's address because my mother and my sister committed suicide, and I want to write a letter to your son because I need to tell him how that feels." People in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous reached out to my son. A year ago, November, my son entered a program for codependency, an outpatient program. Now, that's not the way I wanted him to do it. I wanted him to go into the rooms of Al-Anon, get this program, get the 12 steps, and live happily ever after. Now, that's not what happened. But you know, for 1 year and 5 months, my son has not tried to kill himself. And that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because it was the people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous who reached out to my son. Now, I've passed a lot of judgments on him because, see, Russ goes to one Al-Anon meeting a week, whether he needs it or not. And, you know, I have to bite my tongue because I don't, you know, I want to say that's not enough meetings. I don't believe you can get recovery with one meeting a week. But I have to remember that this is a program of progress. And the miracle is that he's going to meetings, and for 1 year and 5 months, he hasn't tried to kill himself. 1 month ago, my son called me on the phone, and Russ told me that he had lost his job. And my heart sank because Russ has tried to kill himself for a lot less things than that. And I said to him, "Oh, Russ, you know it's going to be okay. These job problems are going to be okay." And he says, "Well, Mom, I don't choose to call it a problem. I choose to call it an opportunity." You know, and it was... You know, it's like the bottom of the pits to total elation in a span of about 60 seconds. And that's the attitude that he's got today. And he believes... And it's happening for him. He's a news broadcaster, and it's a very competitive field. And he's been blessed today. And he said, "You know, I would have never had the nerve to quit that job." He says, "But my dream is to be in a major market." And right now, he's training in New York City in a major market. And that's the miracle, because that's the program. That's this program and the people in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous who reached out to my son. When I was 6.5 years sober, my youngest son called me on the phone and he said, "Mom, I want what you have." And I said, "Well, if you want what I have, you probably need to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous." And he said, "Well," he didn't believe he was that bad. And, he started going to meetings of adult children of alcoholics. And he stayed there for 18 months and did a fourth and fifth step in that fellowship. And a lady that I had 12-stepped into the program of Alcoholics Anonymous took my son to his first AA meeting. Now, you know, a lot of people throw a lot of stones at that fellowship. But you know, that fellowship saved my son's life. God has had a way of removing those kind of judgments from me. And thank you. I think we are entirely too quick to criticize. At any rate, because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, my son graduated from the University of Texas with highest honors. And I got to watch my son walk across that stage, and he was the only Caucasian that took that honor. And the five other guys were of Oriental descent. And that's a miracle. I mean, that's a long way, because James came to live with us a while in Santa Monica, and he was just a little, you know, dope-running Venice bum. And that's a long way from Venice Beach to that podium at the University of Texas. And this past December, James graduated from Northwestern University with a master's in computer science. And that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And James loves his program just like I love this program. And I love to go to Chicago, because that's where he lives today, because he's active in the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. And he goes to a lot of meetings. And he has a sponsor, and he sponsors a lot of people. And those are the things that I was taught to do in the program, and that's what he's been doing. I want to share one more miracle about my sons, because it's all because of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. Their father and I divorced almost 10 years ago, and the relationship they had with their father has been cordial, not that good. And their grandfather died 3 weeks ago. It was my husband's father. And my oldest son had said he absolutely did not want to talk to his dad anymore. He says, I'm so tired of reaching out to my dad, and he doesn't pay any attention to me. He says, I just can't take the rejection anymore. And my youngest son was going to spend last week in Texas, and he had said, I'm not even going to call my dad. And I had said to James, you know, I hope you don't grow to regret that. At any rate, after their grandfather died, my oldest son called me on the phone, and he said, I'm calling my dad, and I'm telling him I'm coming to Texas, because I don't want him to die and me not have a relationship with him. And it's absolutely not important whether he loves me back. It's just important that I love him. And my youngest son, who's been here over 6 years, said to Russ, you're right, I'll go too. And that's the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, because that kind of healing has taken place because of this fellowship, the miracle of the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, when I came to the program of Alcoholics Anonymous, the very best I could do for me is to get me pronounced dead on arrival. That's the very best I could do for me. But the program of Alcoholics Anonymous has breathed life back into me. You have given me everything I have ever wanted out of life. The big book of Alcoholics Anonymous says, left to me, I would have settled for so much less. I would have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the kind of husband I have today. I would have never had the nerve to ask God to give me the kind of job I have, the kind of relationships I have. I would have never had the nerve to ask God to give me those things. But because of a program called Alcoholics Anonymous, those things have been freely given to me. The grace of life. The gifts unearned. Today I am all the things that I ever, ever wanted to be. I am the woman that I always wanted to be. I am self-supporting through my own contribution. I am a loyal, faithful wife, and I could never do that. I love my husband with all my heart, and I don't cheat on him, and I don't lie to him. And I never, ever could do that. Today, I am a trusting friend. When I say I'm going to do it, I do it. I know how to do commitments. And you see, I never understood that. Today, I know that commitment and responsibility are freedom. I used to think those were the things that put you in bondage. But the more committed I am and the more responsible I am, the freer I am. And I never understood that. And most of all, I'm the mom I always wanted to be. And I'm so grateful to a program called Alcoholics Anonymous that you gave me a second chance at being a mom. Because my son got to say in Duluth, my mom was the big book I could never read. And I am so grateful for that opportunity because, you know, I could have died and missed it all. I could have died and missed this whole miracle because that was what I tried to do to me. And because of you, you have totally breathed life into me. And for that, I am so grateful. When I was in Center Hospital, one of the counselors used to start every day with a poem. And I end my AA talks with it because it's what this fellowship means to me. I sought my God, I could not see. I sought my soul eluded me. I sought my brother, and I found all three. Thank you.